You are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeter. To support the show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeter, where every day's casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Steeter.
It is Friday, January 24th, 2014. My name is Sam Steeter. This is the three-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live. Not from the literal nor metaphorical shadow of the New York Times building, but instead from Washington, D.C., the Hyatt. The Hyatt Regency? The Capitol Hyatt. I have no idea where I am. It is the Families USA Health Action Conference. I'm in a basement. And surrounded by other people doing radio programs throughout the country. And have been spending the better part of the 24 hours that I've been here so far, 36 hours, interviewing healthcare wonks. I've got some pretty good interviews to bring home that are in the can, as we say. And we'll hear those over the coming weeks. And I'll be recording a few more. It is it has been a little bit strange. Insofar as the... I've been coming to this conference now for... I don't know. I guess about sitting here with Scott Milliken, the producer of Ring of Fire. We're going to be running some of these interviews on Ring of Fire as well. But I've been coming to this it's been 4 years, 5 years? It was 2010, maybe. 2010 or whatever. But the point is that the nature of the conference has changed. Families USA was set up about 30 years ago as a way of trying to advocate for the expansion of access to health insurance across the country. It was founded by a guy named Ron Pollack. And the Affordable Care Act, while it didn't go as far as I think Ron Pollack had wanted in terms of he was a single-payer advocate, and remain so, but it was a huge step forward in terms of providing coverage. I don't think the affordability aspect of it has caught up quite a bit yet, although it depends on where you are on the income spectrum. But it was a culmination of years of this guy's advocacy. Obviously, at one point, the conference was geared on getting the Affordable Care Act passed. Then it was on keeping it from being struck down by the Supreme Court. Then it was gearing up for its execution. And now it is sort of, I guess, because we're really on the other side of the problems with the website. As far as, you know, I'm talking to people here from around the states who don't function necessarily as navigators, but they function as people who you know, track these things, and the website seems to be more or less fine. And people are talking about other potential fixes, but there is an air of sort of there's no chance of any type of fix when we have the Congress what we have. And then I've also had the opportunity to talk to some people about other issues. I spoke to Robert Craig, Citizen Action in Wisconsin. In Wisconsin, I think, you know, perspectives on Scott Walker are going to become far more important in my estimation. We'll talk more about that with Cliff Schechter. I spoke to some other folks here about the TPP, an interview I will play in the coming days, weeks. That's the Trans-Pacific Partnership, and others, which I'll probably reference with Cliff as the show goes on. We don't have a movie reviewer for today. In past years, I've been sitting here, and, you know, Dick Gregory walked in, and I spoke to Dick Gregory for an hour. The conference is not quite as lively as it has been in the past. Mike Malloy is not around. I was hoping to catch up with Mike. Mark Riley, not around because, of course, WWRL no longer is doing progressive talk. It is now Spanish. So it's been also a little bit weird to just sort of watch the changing nature of progressive talk. Far more localized, far more web-based. We move on. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're hopefully going to be talking to Cliff Schechter. We'll be back in just a moment. Sam Cedar on the Majority Report, and it is Casual Friday, folks, and you know what that means. That means Cliff Schechter, but before we get to Cliff Schechter, of course, we need to play the Cliff Schechter theme song, which sadly for him, he won't be able to hear, but we will be able to hear Cliff in a moment.
Cliff Schechter, Libertas LLC, New Media, Public Relations, and strategy. You want any of these services, you know who you gotta see. Cliff Schechter, LibertasLLC.com.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, Cliff Schechter. Hello, Cliff, are you there?
I'm here, but I am no longer Cliff. I expect you to call me Uncle Sugar.
There you go. Uncle Sugar is in the house, ladies and gentlemen. Yes, the Republican rebranding program, it seems to be going swimmingly, doesn't it, Cliff?
Right on schedule. Right on schedule. One or two things a week. It's either Uncle Sugar coming and forcing all his birth control on you, or rape within marriage is A-OK, or, this is like every, you know, these are like when you go to those, when you were young and you had to go to family parties and there were like great uncles there that were like 102 and said stuff that nobody in the room could believe was being said. That's like the entire Republican Party now.
Yeah, you know, it's pretty stunning. I mean, this, of course, was the 41st anniversary of Roe v. Wade. And they can't even, you know, like when there's obviously a lot of attention being paid to a woman's right to choose, they cannot seem to help themselves. Now, just for folks who don't know, Cliff is referencing, Huckabee was speaking to, and this is not just Huckabee on his TV show. Huckabee was at the RNC's, what do they call it, the winter meeting,
in
Washington. Yeah, and you know, I mean, I can understand. Tell me, give me your opinion here now, Cliff. Is this Huckabee saying, hey, wait a second, if Chris Christie's not jumping in this race, and we will get to that in a bit, but is this Huckabee... What I can't figure out is this Huckabee signaling that he wants to be a candidate again? Or is this Huckabee saying, like, I got to pick up some slack here. I'm getting bumped off of radio shows, whatever. I've got a new project I need, so I need to be in the news. I mean, what is this?
Well, actually, I think it's both. Because if you look at these days, and we've talked about it many times before, being effective, you know, on right-wing radio as a right-wing entertainer these days is the same exact thing as being effective as a right-wing political contender, right? You can say and do the exact same things, which is why they keep losing nationally. And in any, you know, and when in any state where there's sort of any modicum of a fair race. So, you know, I think he's realizing both of those things. He's, to quote a phrase he might know, being left behind. And he needs to step up his game. I think certainly part of it is Bob McDonald blew up, Christie blew up, everybody hates Ted Cruz, including his own party. There's certainly room there. The thing is, the thing about Huckabee that used to be something that was sort of a more attractive part of Huckabee was he was, you know, this preacher who was obviously very conservative, but went on so-called liberal media, meaning anything that's not right-wing and crazy, and actually, you know, got along with people, was a sort of reasonable, charming fellow when you talked to him.
Well, Huckabee also, before he got into that race, I mean, he was somewhat, he had a reputation for some decent amount of economic populism too, which is why he was one of those guys who I thought there was real concern about, because he was appealing to a certain amount of economic populism as well as being sort of, you know, on the God squad. But
that's right.
But you know, and he had to sort of back away from that in the course of running in the Republican Party. But
oh, sure, the moneyed wing, of course, came in. The Club for Growth wing, let's call it, freaked out. He'd raised taxes, actually, in Arkansas. He'd done things to try to, he'd been someone who was much more conservative sort of socially and economically, as Republicans go, had been relatively moderate. But you're right, he had to move to the right. But I think he sees openings on a variety of fronts. I mean, he's a guy who, when he finished being governor of Arkansas, literally took all the furniture out of the the state house, not the state house, the governor's mansion. Like, and it was nailed down. He took with him.
Well, to be fair, I'm doing the same thing at this hotel I'm staying at in D.C.
It totally should be. The towels, you know, they've got some nice bathrobes there. Like Beverly Hills Cop.
They left out the towels. They left out some glasses for me. They left out that clock radio that attaches to the old style of iPhone connections. And fortunately for me, I brought a big extra duffel, and I'm going to be taking home that complimentary 32-inch flat-screen television that they have in the in the hotel room.
I've seen you, you know, at those conferences we go to in Vegas when everything is over, and there's still sort of all the swag is left.
Right.
And you get but
I go to these things one part for the interview, one part for all the new housewares.
That's exactly. It's a write-off that way. You can look at it that way. I mean, with Huckabee, he was kind of known for kind of this sort of petty graft, you know. He did a lot of things kind of along those lines. And he, like many of these other right-wingers, who, you know, running for president is a way to sort of enter the right-wing welfare stream. Where you
have
to go and give the speeches and get the radio show and write the stupid books that don't make any sense, but think tanks mass buy so that you get bestseller. A bestseller, and it's a way to make a lot of money. He's done that from this. So either he sets up his game and realizes you're right, he's losing his radio show and other stuff, and he needs to be, for lack of a better term, more of a dick. Or he can also look and see that there may be room in that race. But again, the space, you know, for him in that race was as somebody who people actually liked, who was conservative.
Well, but,
and the more he opens his mouth on these things, nobody likes him.
Well, not nobody. I mean, nobody in terms of a national win, but certainly he he creates a hardcore audience for him within the Republican base. And this is the dynamic that we've been talking about for some time, too, which is that contrary to libertarian ideology, sometimes when someone's working in their individual best interest, it's not in the best interest of the whole. And in this case, that individual is, for example, is Huckabee, and the whole being the Republican Party. This type of stuff really hurts them on a national level. I would imagine also even during the off-year elections, because if traditionally the religious zealots in the Republican Party will always vote, so they tend to do better in off-year elections. But if you activate women and those people who sort of take offense to the idea that, you know, we're talking contraception here. People should remember that we're talking contraception. This is pretty settled stuff in American culture. And
the America we live in, not the one of deep-fried squirrel dinners out in the country with your five sons named Billy Bob, all wearing the same flannel shirt and all weighing about 150 pounds over the average recommended weight. This is not...
I have a friend named Bob who shoots squirrels, to be honest with you, and I think in terms of contraception, he has no problem with it. I think this is really fringe stuff. And
no, it is. I mean, it is. And the thing is that, look, from when you look back at what just happened in this past election in Virginia, the way that Terry McAuliffe won was a huge gender gap, like even larger than we'd had in the past. It's growing by leaps and bounds because of stuff like this. I mean, think about what Huckabee said. I mean, this wasn't even just, we shouldn't be covering your birth control. It's essentially, it's the kind of stuff you hear in, like, from, you'd expect to hear from, like, the Taliban. Women need to cover their faces because men can't control themselves from these temptresses. I mean, essentially, women are all, like, sex-filled, birth control addicts who are just looking to jump on the next guy, unless we sort of restrain that. That's essentially the subtext of what Huckabee said.
Yeah,
the view is so ridiculous. It's so outdated in so many ways. And it's so sort of, I think, it's so representative of the Republican mindset of being fearful of women's independence of any sort. It goes back to, like, deep-seated fears that men have. You need a psychiatrist to come in and start asking them about fear of being cuckolded and stuff like that. In a year when Democrats have so many talented female candidates running, from Wendy Davis to Alison Lundgren Grimes, Michelle Nunn, women running for re-election to the Senate like Jean Shaheen and Kay Hagan and Mary Landrieu, and I mean, there's a lot of women running in a lot of important races, and these guys are doing their best to sort of hand it over to them.
Yeah, I mean, I think. It's not completely inconsistent. I mean, look, if you do accept, and I think, people who actually think about this understand that when you talk about contraception in particular, you're talking about what is fundamentally, it's not just an issue of women, of slut shaming here. It is also an issue of economics. When women have the ability to control whether or not they get pregnant, when they get pregnant, it is also a big economic issue, right? I mean, if I can hold off a pregnancy until I'm a certain age, I can build a base or foundation in my career, or if I can hold, to a certain time or forever, I can build a certain career. Let me see if I can. Oh, wait a second! It just crashed my thing. I want to try and see if I can get this sound up so I can tell, people can actually listen to this with their own ears. but I'm having a little
while
bit
you're
of
doing it, I'll just say I think it's at the very core. I mean, I think that always should be the argument, frankly. I don't think women can participate equally in our society if they obviously cannot control their bodies and it belongs to somebody else. It's a vessel of the government. So,
and that's why it's not, you know, it's not inconsistent for a guy who perceives himself to be an economic populist or has those inclinations to begin to hammer a women's ability to enter the workforce and have some strength in the workforce, because he's still fundamentally addressing this issue of the middle class, of the, in particular, you know, having stagnant wages for 30 years. And he's simply appealing to the, is it lesser angels or just the most horrid aspects of people? I can't get it. My thing keeps crashing. He is basically addressing a problem. He's addressing it in a way that is horribly destructive and retrogressive. He basically said that the U.S. government is functioning
Humble
as
sugar, as it will.
Yeah, it's he's saying for Democrats to reduce women to beggars for cheap government-funded birth control is demeaning to the women that I know who are far more complicated than their libido and management of their reproductive system. I don't even know. It's just absurd. And he says,
I wonder who the women are who he knows.
Right. And he says that, they're waiting for Uncle Sugar to... Unbelievable. Let me try and play it here and see if this works in any fashion. Maybe it will. Hold on. I can't get anything to work. Hold on. But it is pretty bad stuff. And... I can't get it to work, but it's interesting to see Huckabee say this. And, you know, I mean, I remember Pat Buchanan back in 92 talking about the culture war. I mean, this is what has been sort of the saving grace. If it wasn't for this, if these guys weren't so nuts, man, we would have, you know, Social Security would have been cut now by President Obama. Let's transition for a minute. I want to get to the grand old police blotter, as it were, because it seems like these things, I don't know, when it rains, it pours, I guess, for Republican and conservative icons and the law. But, I was talking, I did a couple interviews with some guys from the organization Preserve Social Security and Medicare, and... they had met with Gene Sperling, who's President Obama's chief economic advisor, this week in the White House in anticipation of the State of the Union address. And President Obama is slated to talk about income inequality. We're seeing a broader push for raising the minimum wage. We're seeing a broader push for things like paid sick leave. And these guys walked out of that room convinced that if there was ever an opportunity, even now, to cut Social Security, and look, these guys I'm talking to, these are not, you know, of the metrosexual ilk like you and I. You know, these are not young, creative class types who are emo progs. These are long-time, sort of embedded in the beltway type of guys who said, we don't understand.
And if they leave the beltway, it's generally, you're talking about the two guys that were meeting with him?
Yes. These are not outside. I mean, these are, you know, groups that have been well ensconced in the Democratic establishment. And they both said, we came out of that meeting and it was quite clear that if they have the opportunity to engage in a grand bargain, that they will cut Social Security if they can. That the only thing that is keeping us from cutting Social Security is Republican intransigence, because there would have to be some request for raised revenue. And they said, well, you know, we can't understand it. Now, I don't know if they can't understand it or they just don't feel comfortable, you know, alienating anybody But, you know, it's clear this is just an agenda item for the administration. There's no policy behind it. There's nothing but just an incredible desire for it. And so
it's a legacy piece, even right. though I think it wouldn't end up, income inequality keeps going the same way it does, and if they were to do that to Social Security and pass the trade deal and some of the other things that exacerbated it, I think, you know, you'll be remembered a little bit like Hoover, quite frankly, as opposed to like you'd want to be remembered for this
I don't
period
think so.
Of time.
No, I'm not even sure that's true. I mean, I think from a policy standpoint, in their calculation, I mean, look, the idea that you would cut Social Security and talk about income equality is just absurd. But, you know, I mean, we've talked about why I think it's they perceive it to be in their best interest in terms of their legacy. But it is just stunning. And it really, you know, I don't know. Did you read that David Remnick piece on Obama in The New Yorker?
I've seen some excerpts so far. I haven't read the whole thing, though, no.
Yeah, I mean, so much of it strikes me as there's just, like, how can we... they are playing, and they still continue to play, too. It's quite clear to me that the legacy was built about, you know, that they perceive the legacy will be that President Obama tried to reason with the Republicans. And that is enough for them. I mean, I think, you know, that the president and his advisors feel that they have a responsibility to a legacy that is involved with the fact that they're the first African that he's the first African American president, and that they can damage that rather than enhance it in some ways by pushing through anything that the establishment perceives as ideological. I don't necessarily agree with that that perspective, obviously, but I think that's the way that they feel. I think that's been their strategy since day one.
Yeah, I've said, because I've had people who've come down on all sides of, or at least a few different sides of what, you know, animates the president. And I think it's been a combination of stuff that he really believes, which to me is a clear example of the Social Security, for example, and other things where he thinks that everyone getting along and working things out together is more important than getting the right policy, even if that means fighting for it. Which leads to the part two, which I think is another part of him, which is even the things he does think are right, he's not willing to fight for. You know what I mean? Right. Even his economic instincts that are good, like raising the minimum wage and other things. I mean, he'll mention it in his speech. What he'll do about it or to get it done, and frankly, it doesn't matter with that house that we have to deal with. But, you know, he had his opportunity to do these things. And, you know, we saw what was done and what wasn't done. So, I mean, I'm nonplussed by anything he does anymore because I think he's bought into a lot of the neoliberal conventional D.C. doctrine. Free trade is good. Don't just ignore the consequences to vast swaths of the country that have turned to literally ghost towns and cities. You know, Social Security, we spend too much money, but let's go after Social Security as part of it because it should be shared pain, even though a defense contractor losing money versus somebody in Social Security is not shared pain. It is not even a comparison. You know, these are doctrinal beliefs of his, and they're wrong and they're counterproductive. But the problem is that there are those, and then there are the ones where he frankly has his better instincts, but he refuses to fight for them. And so what do we get in the end?
Yeah.
A few good things.
Well,
A few good things here and there that I'm proud of him for, that I'm glad he did, and a whole lot of the rest of his agenda that has been not nearly as effective as it should have been.
Well, and we'll certainly have a sense in the coming weeks after the State of the Union to see, you know, where the administration is headed on this and how much help they're going to give the Democrats, at least in maintaining the status quo with their retention of the Senate. And you mentioned the TPP, and I did an interview with Ethan Rome, who is the exiting director of Healthcare Action Network, I think it is, and he had a great illustration of what the TPP will do. I don't want to step on the interview that I'm going to play later with him, but it deserves multiple mentions. But he just said, for example, you know, just to get a sense, I mean, we've all heard the stories about how the regulatory structure of the TPP would create, sort of trump the sovereignty of nations in favor of corporate profit projections. And we've seen examples of it in, like, in NAFTA, where a logging company heading out to Canada sues Canada for $900 million because they won't open up a certain forest that they don't have access to for their logging. And his example was that any attempt, if we get to the point where we can say we get lawmakers to statutorily require and allow, for that matter, Medicare, let's say, in Medicare D, to bargain and negotiate for lower drug prices by volume, which they cannot do now under Medicare D, that theoretically the pharmaceutical industry under the TPP could sue the U.S. government in this corporate tribunal for either compensation, essentially to say, like, you can't do that because that diminishes our profits. And that's the structure of the TPP, that it could, it would strip sovereignty. It would allow, you could not have government savings on those type of things because it steps on the profits of pharmaceutical industries. And so that was just, I thought, a great illustration, and that's why I wanted to raise it. And you had said TPP, and that's what it made me think of. But let's...
No, well, I mean, and again, how on one hand you say you're fighting to eradicate, not eradicate, but to help lessen the unbelievable income inequality situation we have, which is clearly the worst in about 100 years. Nothing bad happened back then, by the way, when we had a similar situation, so don't worry. And, you know, and how you can say that in one hand, on one hand, and then be wanting this thing on the other hand, I mean, it just, you know, it doesn't intellectually follow. And that's maybe the problem, is I don't think his whole philosophy intellectually follows. I just think it's sort of a mishmash of kind of, you know, as you said, you called Social Security thing just an agenda item. It's not part of a broader policy that you know, broader set of policy goals that all lead to one thing. You know what I mean? And I think really that's the problem we have here.
All right, so we got to touch on.
But we've talked enough about Obama in the past. Let's talk about some Republicans who are going to prison.
I was just going to say. So now, have we had a chance to talk about, when did this whole McConnell thing happen? Was it just a couple of days ago? I can't even. I'm completely turned around here. But it certainly seems like the McConnells are going to jail.
They do appear to be in that kind of a position. They've got a 14-count indictment against them. You know, conspiracy, fraud, you know, trading, using your trading office to, you know, using your office to provide favors for people for money, you know, that kind of thing. I mean, hell, he's flying around on this guy's jet. The guy paid for his daughter's wedding. These are pretty obviously things that might step over the line. It's funny because it you remember the class of 2009 with Christie and McDonald being elected? And these two were the two that you know, oh my God, they could be president.
Right.
And we kept hearing that forever about these two, that this is the new face of the Republican Party. You know, when McDonald actually got in, even though he's a right-wing loon, that he was more of a pragmatic moderate. And to his credit, compared to someone like Cuccinelli, I mean, I guess it's all comparative. McDonald, he did do a few things that were not Tea Party crazy. But apparently, he also was on the take. So, you know, it's not looking good for him. Let's put it that way. He was offered a plea deal, which he rejected, to plead guilty to one count. So... you know, maybe he thinks he can win. Whatever it is, obviously his political career is done. You know, and again, this is on the heels of obviously what we've seen with Mr. plugging up the bridge in New Jersey.
Well, and there's been some developments over the past week in what's happening with Christie, We know that the Senate and Assembly, the New Jersey Senate, the New Jersey Assemblies have now combined their committees into a joint committee that's investigating this. This is also somewhat problematic, I think, for the governor, because you're seeing now this type of coordination coming out of the legislative end. And I think more importantly, frankly, is the report yesterday, that broke yesterday, that there have now been subpoenas issued by the Department of Justice on the and it depends on who's reporting you're checking with, but everybody seems to report, and it's been confirmed that subpoenas were sent to the Republican Party in New Jersey, Governor Christie's re-election campaign in New Jersey. The New York Times reports that subpoenas also include some of the 19 individuals subpoenaed by the joint, the now joint State House committee. So that could include people like the Wally Danger, or whatever that guy's name, Wildstein, David Wildstein, who was the chief dirty trickster, and then Baroni.
And let's
remember,
he's the one whose lawyer said in that committee when he was taking the fifth that if he would get immunity, he'd have a lot more to say.
Yeah.
And he's the one that Christie threw, you know, right under the bridge and claimed, oh, that guy was a loser in high school. I didn't know him at all, even though they were, like, on the same baseball team. Christie's like, I haven't seen him and talked to him in ages, even though a picture came out while the whole thing was going on with the bridge and they were talking to each other. I mean, so he's attacked the guy personally. I mean, I don't know what that guy wants. He's going to choose to do, but it would seem to me that when your reputation has been publicly attacked by the governor and everything else, there's not much of a motivation to defend him if he gets immunity.
Now, my understanding is that that committee is getting a whole nother set of documents in early February, and I'll tell you something, you know, in the immunity from federal prosecution, I think is the real prize that you want to go for when you're a guy like Wildstein. Now, also, we don't know, but Samson could also be subpoenaed. Now, David Samson's the big mucky muck who was the attorney for the Rockefeller Group. In addition to being a Christie advisor, he's the attorney for the Rockefeller Group, which is tied up in a basically a completely different charge. Yes, in Hoboken. And we know that the mayor of Hoboken sat down for a couple hours with the Department of Justice last weekend, a holiday weekend. We know that the FBI has sent agents to in and around Hoboken to try and verify her story. So if she's not lying, there's going to be, I mean...
Well, and I guess she could be lying, but someone's going to have to explain to me. Well, they also talked to a number of her aides, one of whom I actually know from a long time back.
Do you have a scoop for us?
I'm sorry? No, I wish I did. I just know, you know, I'm friends with him, Vaughn Melly, who's who's her communications director. Used to be at Blue Jersey and write for them and show up at those Netroots Nations that we go, events that we go to. He's a good guy. I'm just saying, these are people that went and spoke, and talked under oath and said, essentially, and corroborated her story. So all these people now want to go to prison when they didn't need to say anything at all? And you know, she's offered to take a lie detector test. She spoke under oath. What would be her motivation in doing any of that? You know, I mean, also on top of that, I don't know if you saw the mayor, I think the mayor or is it the state rep from Elizabeth, New Jersey, came out and said that their DMV, right after they vocally supported Corzine over Christie, right after he was elected the first time, the DMV there was shut down for a few days without explanation, causing all sorts of problems for them. And this is just kind of what we said when we saw what happened with that bridge. When you see something so petty and stupid as that, you knew there had to be so many other cases. And I'm guessing that this is the 5-6 cases, the Jersey City mayor who had all his meetings canceled, these other things that we've seen are like not even the tip of the iceberg. My guess is there's probably hundreds of these things waiting to be discovered for any intrepid reporter who wants, because this is clearly what that bridge thing showed, because it didn't accomplish anything. It wasn't like, if I shut down the bridge, I'm getting something in return. It was just a petty punishment to somebody that wasn't going to accomplish anything. And so once you knew that, you knew that that's the way this guy operates, quite clearly, and his public behavior shows it. So, you know, I've said this before, I think these things will keep coming out. The indictment list will probably eventually, which I think he will grow. I mean, he's toast. He's not finishing out his term in New Jersey. I'm quite positive of that. So yeah,
people
that should be
know,
fun to watch.
One more thing that, you know, like I say, those subpoenas, at least as being reported from the DOJ, are in relation to the shutting down of the bridge. Now, you know, we don't know if it was just a petty retribution or if it was a retribution that wasn't about something so petty, but it was about $1 billion development over in Fort Lee. We don't know. But what we do know is, at the very least, the subpoenas being sent out at least indicate that the Department of Justice has determined that there is some federal offense that, if it was committed, the Department of Justice believe is a crime. So,
well, I mean, I'm not a lawyer, but right away, whenever any crime you commit crosses states, it becomes a federal offense. The Port Authority, by definition, is a dual state entity.
Right. When you're talking about interstate commerce, too, I mean, obviously. But...
Exactly. So immediately you're talking about a crime that's committed across state lines. So, yeah, I'm sure abusing his office and certain other things might be federal offenses, too. And again,
it's not just a question of federal offense. I mean, you know, I don't think there's a statute saying that you're not supposed to shut down lanes in the trap, but they found clearly something that shows that this is an abuse of power or some criminal violation. That it's obviously federal because it is about two different states. But
I'm just saying, I think it's pretty funny that all this stuff occurred, you know, with this class of 2009, these guys that were supposed to be so stellar and the new faces of the Republican Party, and both of them, obviously Christie and McDonald, were both among the final 5 or 6 people that are being considered for VP by Romney.
Right.
You know, and so now I guess we have to move on to the class of 2010. I mean, we already know that Marco Rubio, put $100,000 of debt on the Florida Republican Party credit card and got his homes foreclosed on because he didn't feel like paying, not because he didn't have, he was not going to because he was a poor person, for example, or a bank screwed him. We also know that Rand Paul likes to go to Wikipedia and other places and be very derivative in speeches that he gives. So we know that those two guys aren't the most honest gentlemen either. So who knows? Maybe the class of 2010 is up next.
Well, Scott Walker, frankly, I think has definitely been the one of the biggest beneficiaries of all of this. I spoke to...
Although he's had some people from his office in the Milwaukee County...
That's right.
Who are being investigated, and I'm not sure where that... I haven't followed it recently, where that's gone. He's not completely clean of this stuff either.
And yes.
I'm sure most of all these guys aren't.
Well, you know, I spoke to the head of Citizen Action from from Wisconsin while I was here, and I'll play that interview later in the week, and we talk a little bit about those Scott Walker investigations, those John Doe investigations, and he's not convinced that they're going to be able to find... some people have gone to prison, but he says it's going to be hard to trace this back to Scott Walker. And they have, you know, people in Wisconsin have a warning for the rest of the country. Watch out for Scott Walker. But
I think he's actually, in a way, what I kind of said what Mike Huckabee was, what that made him dangerous. And the other one I've brought up before that scares me along those lines is John Thune. Who are these very right-wing guys, but they come off actually as likable. They don't scream and yell like Ted Cruz and say lunatic stuff. They actually, in interviews, come off like, you know, somewhat likable guys, when behind the scenes, they're right-wing nuts. So no, I know Scott Walker is dangerous. I'm just saying, even if he doesn't end up getting indicted, I think there's going to be some things very close to him
right.
in that office. But you know, we'll see. I mean, there's no doubt he concerns me. He and of the remaining people, he and Thune are the ones that concern me the most.
Yeah, and I noticed Thune did some appearances sort of the day after Christie was, or as this Christie thing was blown up. But before we go, Cliff.
We can't go without talking about Dinesh D'Souza.
Yes. Now, for those of you who don't know Dinesh D'Souza, he was the one who wrote, what was the book? The book, didn't he write a book saying that President Obama was so wrapped up in Kenyan anti-colonialism that's why he hated America? Was that his whole thing?
He did. His dad was, and then he made a movie, Obama 2016 or whatever, where I think the world was like blowing up and the bubonic plague had returned and, you know, various other items like that. But yes, his book was basically that Obama, because of his dad, who hated the British, because, you know, that colonialization, had this anti-colonial mindset that led to why he hated white people and among other things. You know, he's had a good number. I think it's the roots of Obama's rage. There we go. But he's also done The Enemy at Home, you know, how the liberals led to 9/11. He's an all-around great guy. The End of Racism, What's So Great About Christianity? I'm sure that's a page turner right there. And the thing that's so awesome about him is he's a classic wingnut welfare, you know, was getting he was at the Dartmouth Review when they, I think they said some part, you know, he went to Dartmouth, he edited it, and then they said some positive things about Adolf Hitler, which is always nice.
Right.
Went on, so immediately
very
that,
cute
that,
while
that
he's sleeping, I think is what Sarah Silverman has said.
Yeah, it marked him immediately as a star, because when you say good things about Hitler as a college guy, they know you're on the rise, on the right.
Right.
So, you know, he got the usual probably six-figure sinecure to sit at one of the think tanks and had his books bought in mass bulk. He's never been, you know, a very charismatic guy, not very talented, but, you know, especially also when you're looking for non-white people in the Republican Party, there was a benefit of that, too. And the last couple of years with him have just been utterly hysterical. I mean, first, I think about a year and a half ago, he was the head of this King's College in New York, which is an evangelical college. And he showed up, I'm not even kidding you, I mean, it's fun just saying this, to this Christian values meeting, seminar type of thing they had, with a woman who was not his wife of 20 years, who he was calling his fiancée. You know,
that caused the divorce.
You know, it's just something you say, fiance. You know,
right.
It's just something you say. I mean, when they quoted him in the article, he was fired by King's College for doing this, and he stayed in a hotel room with this woman. I mean, didn't even try to hide it. It seems to me, and he's like, obviously, I wouldn't have introduced her as my fiance if I thought we were doing anything improper. I mean, you're at a Christian values meeting where what you guys supposedly believe in is like not that. And so now, on the heels of that triumph of Dinesh D'Souza, he has now been indicted for committing campaign finance fraud for the kid. And again, in hysterical fashion, because he apparently had straw donations, which means he gave people money so that they could then donate they could donate up to the maximum to Wendy Long, the person who ran against Kirsten Gillibrand. I think lost 73-27%.
Well, that, to be fair, it probably would have been 77-21% if he hadn't.
Those donations helped bump her up towards a 25% showing, also now known as the LODA in New York. But the key to it is apparently, and guess who was his co-editor at the Dartmouth Review, who had nighttime fever dreams about Adolf Hitler, one Wendy Long of New York. So that apparently explains why he was willing to break the law to funnel money to her, even though she never stood a chance, and now has been actually charged by that toothless institution that generally, when it comes to campaign finance violations, they don't ever usually do anything. But
well, this was the Department of Justice.
Yeah.
This is the Department of Justice. There's the USA in New York. And so Dinesh D'Souza sharing a jail cell maybe with Justin Bieber, I guess.
And McDonald and Christie. It's a good foursome. And I mean, again, D'Souza
I smell
is
sitcom.
Like, I shall come to D'Souza is like is a lot like your Ann Coulter's. I mean, he's just a terrible person who says terrible things all to get media attention and to enrich himself. You know, and like blaming the left for 9/11, which we could go into all the reasons why that's not true and why it was
what?
Certain other presidents that ignored warnings, but we don't need to do that. I'll just say this. Remember, I think it was last week when I told you that the Schadenfreude from Schadenfreude from Chris Christie is what could wake me up and propel me through my day.
Yeah, you must be now. You must be having to take a jog just to calm down.
I mean, I'm like working out and stuff. Dinesh D'Souza, the possibility of his going to prison is enough to literally, like, send me, allow me to be the first person to reach Mars. I mean, we're talking about rocket-propelled fuel here. It's that good, Sam. It's just that good.
Yeah. No, it's pretty fun. It's a pretty fun time to gloat on Twitter, I have to say. I have not had the opportunity to do that as much as I want to, but Cliff,
please get out there and do that.
I will,
because you had a very nice comment about, I don't remember if it was Roosevelt Island or something of that sort, shutting down the, whatever it was, where the inauguration was shut down.
Oh, he was supposed to. Thank you. Yeah, every now and then I tune in. Yes, I suggested that Chris Christie had canceled his inauguration on Ellis Island earlier this week because Ellis Island refused to okay the development of a mall from one of Christie's buddies. Or something like that.
What I'm saying to you is there's just too much fun stuff going on.
I understand. So I'm with you on that. All right, Cliffy. Until next week, as always, a pleasure. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Sammy. I appreciate it, buddy. Have a good week.
You too. All right, folks. Here's what we're going to do. Oh, I have actually a song from Jimmy Reefer Cake. And it is, I didn't even plan to do this, but it is... about Chris Christie. I should also say, we're talking about Twitter. So I'm getting, I went out to dinner last night with Scott and a couple other folks in Washington, D.C. And I come back and there's this guy on Twitter. I can't wait. He's saying, like, oh, my God, you only have 5,000 Facebook likes or whatever it is. And I thought it was just like some typical troll. I get a lot of that, folks. But I saw that he was that the couple of regular listeners were engaging with him about marriage equality. And then he turns out to run some organization, CFAM, I didn't know what it was, or maybe that's not even the name of it. But I thought it can't be a very big organization. I mean, he's only got like 500-700 followers on Twitter. And so I engaged the guy a little bit, and I said, I have no, who are you? And apparently he sends me a link to a YouTube that I did about him. He apparently works for some organization. He was on some radio show complaining about the presence of lesbians on a Food Network show. I guess it's called Yeah, okay. Scott's bringing it up for me. Austin Ruse, which I'm sorry. I still contend this could all be a ruse. I mean, that's exactly the name that I would use if I was pretending to be a human being who was talking about how I can't have my 8-year-old daughter watch Chopped, which apparently is some type of Food Network show. And he, on this clip, he had talked about how he had to lie to his 8-year-old daughter because she thought she saw the lesbian and on Chopped and thought that the lesbian had introduced the other lesbian as her wife, and he had to say no. He said that life, they're just friends, and that's just, like, he said, this is my life. And the daughter was like, I don't think so. And he was just outraged. And so the video that he sent me was me mocking him. And of course, I responded to him on Twitter saying, you know, I watched that clip of me talking about you with my 8-year-old daughter. And she heard what you had to say. And then, thank you, I had to explain to her, I was forced to explain to her what a bigot means. So, but the guy, I don't know, I got the sense the guy wanted to come on the show. And so I invited him, and I guess maybe we'll have him on the show sometime next week. It'll be fun, just because I'm curious. Well, I mean, I think it's self-explanatory as to why it'll be fun. All right, so now, because I'm open to other people's opinions. That's what I'm fair and balanced here. If you think it's disgusting that... if you think it's disgusting that, you know, gay people would actually have the audacity to go on television and, you know, be open about it, I want to hear it, because that's definitely a perspective that deserves to be heard. So I am now hoping to get this Jimmy Reefer Cake song loaded. And then we will go into...
Hey, little girl, is your dad?
Oh, here we go. All right, ladies and gentlemen. This is Jimmy Reefer Cake's Song of the Week. It is sung to the tune of Nebraska, which, of course, is a late Springsteen tune. Late in the oeuvre, I believe. And this is about Chris Christie. Let's hear it.
Hey, little girl, is your daddy home? Or is it stuck in traffic? I'm holding the cone. Revenge is what I desire. I'm a big, fat governor liar. Is your Democrat mayor doing good for you? He can't do the things to you that I do. Hurricane relief that you desire. I'm a big fat governor liar. Yeah, I gotta lose some weight. Sometimes it's like someone took a knife, baby, edgy and old, in liposuction and sucked out my soul. At night I wake up with the sheets soaking wet, the smell of meatballs and lasagna farts wafted in my head. I should resign, I should retire. Big fat governor liar. Yeah, I'm a big fat governor liar.
I love it. I don't have the applause button right at my fingertips, but Jimmy Reefer Cake. Let's see. Would that work? Hey, folks, before we go into the better half of the program, let me just remind you that Cliff Schechter will be joining me on Ring of Fire this weekend. So check your local listings. For Ring of Fire, we can go to ringoffireradio.com to get more information. Cliff and I break down the week's news on a Ring of Fire. So check that out. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, I will take your phone calls. 646-257-3920. Michael seems to be freaking out about... Austin Ruse Although I'm not convinced that any of it's real. I think it could be a ruse. Folks, it is your membership that makes this show possible. Become a member today at majority.fm. Also, you can support the show by going to majorityreportkickback.com. Majorityreportkickback.com. Click on the Amazon link. If you buy Amazon junk, buy it through that link. We get a kickback. JustCoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY, get 10% off. Also, get the app. MajorityApp.com is the number. MajorityApp.com is the number. The URL. I'm doing it all today, folks. Working every aspect of the tech. Give us a good review on iTunes. Be a part of today's show. Give me a call. 646-257-3920. 646-257-3920 is the number. You can IM me. The IM machine is on. If you're a libertarian, want to explain to me how your Freedom Industries spill did not in any way follow the perfect libertarian strategy for making yourself free, let me know. Housekeeping, Matt and Mike Monday. On Tuesday, I'll be talking to Gabriel Sherman, the author of that Ailes book. All right, folks, see you in the fun half.